So it's 4:20 again, and Jake has been smoking like a chimney all evening and like going back and forth to the fridge, listening to really cheesy reggae and just being a general nuisance around the house.
Cheesy reggae. I think you're absolutely misclassified there. It's a brilliant fucking classic 70s and 80s dub mix I found on YouTube, actually. I'll link it in the Discord so you can like have a listen if you want. It's banging. It's definitely perfect 420 vibes.
Well, this year we didn't go to Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park, which is like a London tradition in 420. Like all the stoners basically gather as like a quote unquote protest, but it's really not a protest. It's just a place where people like smoke weed openly and like finger bang each other. Like lots of white people with dreadlocks and stuff. It's not a good scene.
There are quite a few people, white people with dreadlocks, that's for goddamn sure. But it's also a bit of a laugh. Like, it's also like quite fun. There's like, you know, like, I think it never really got out of hand. It's always only when the police start like beating people up and fucking arresting people that it gets.
Rarely happens.
No, it doesn't. It does happen every year, but they just like they don't fucking report it that much. They overreport it even. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's just what do you expect if like all the stoners and the dealers are like gathered in one place? Like I'm surprised that the police don't get like a chicken pen and just like round everyone. I'm joking. That's terrible. But yeah, like I went twice, like once in uni and then once after we graduated with a friend, and it's not a fun time. I was like, I like to smoke socially, but like not when there's like fake political like posture around it or whatever.
Yeah, it's more fun to just have your own 420 and like do your own thing. Yeah. That's what I kind of realized over the years, is that like that kind of major gathering in Hyde Park is really for the young'uns. I think if you're like, I think I'm at the last kind of age where that would be acceptable, if you know what I mean.
You'd be pretty old timey, like.
I think I would still be, but no, I wouldn't be an older person there. I know that there are older people there, like fucking smoking up, but like, I feel like for me, like, it's more of like a, I don't know, not like a mentally immature thing, but it's also just like, I don't know, people are just in a different political mindset about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I used to be like that fucking kid when I was 15 or whatever, definitely. But like, you just kind of, I'm just too cynical now. I'm like, I just don't think, I don't think anything will come from me blazing up in the park with everyone else. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, oh, look, there's like so many people here. So, like, so many people smoke weed. It's like, yeah, we know that. We've known this for fucking years. We know that, but it doesn't change any of the reality of it. And every time anything gets introduced in Parliament, it gets totally laughed at. Yeah. So
I don't think that we're going to see the same efforts for legalization here in the UK for like a very, very long time. I mean, they've tried and every single thing has been like shot down. But that's why you get on the Eurostar, 2 hours, mate. You're in fucking Amsterdam, mate, where fucking weed is legal. And you have it large, mate. You have it fucking large.
Well, I mean, so there's always discussion about them trying to close all the coffee shops and stuff in Amsterdam. No. Like through coronavirus, I read all of that. No. They went through the whole, they go through it every 5 years or whatever, where a new minister will come in or a new mayor of the town will come in about, it's really a problem, all these English tourists coming and smoking weed and, you know, fucking, I don't know why I just put a posher English voice on for a Dutch person. I definitely should have tried my best here to go to fucking, I can't really do a Dutch act. The Dutch fucking voice, like, tone and their language entirely perplexes me.
Look, mate, without weed, like Amsterdam would just be sinister with all their like weird like racist Black Pete Christmas elf shit and their like prostitutes that are like gyrating in the windows. Like without weed, I think Amsterdam would be just have like a sinister vibe to it. So like, and also it makes so much money, I don't think that they'll be getting rid of it anytime soon. They just like to panic the British tourists and like get us to like behave ourselves. And like a little bit of, you can't have complete and utter like libertine excess. Like there has to be some little cheeky element of like restraint. That's what makes it fun.
Dude, I've just fucking cracked it. I've literally, my mind is just fucking blown. They're never going to close the fucking coffee shops. But of course, they put articles out saying that they're going to do that. And then it makes people go, oh shit, we better go to Amsterdam and fucking do all the coffee shops before they fucking go. And then they go and they spend money in Amsterdam. So it's probably just like journalism paid for by the tourist fucking bureau of the Netherlands to make more money. Like, I can't believe what a brainwave I just had.
It's literally that like Tim and Eric meme where he's like, stop smoking weed, be professional, Jake, we're recording our fucking podcast, okay? We don't need to hear your rambling.
No, we're talking about this is the reverse psychology that maneuvers behind the scenes, that manipulates us all into making decisions that you're completely unaware of. So this is the real shit that we talk about on this podcast.
I prefer Amsterdam weed culture to LA weed culture, and they're both places that I frequent. And like, LA weed culture is just like antisocial and shit, and it's like you go to this like fucking like clinical environment to buy. It's either the places are either try really hard to seem like bohemian and hippie, or they try really hard to seem like clinical and medicinal, or they do the whole stoner bro like Snoop Dogg 420 aesthetic, and it just seems so like hyper capitalist and like manufactured there. And then it's not really a social weed culture in LA. Everybody just like buys their weed and then goes back to their houses and like smokes in their houses or like out on the beach or whatever if they want to be social. Whereas in Amsterdam, it's so nice to just go and sit in a coffee shop and like, you'll even strike up, because when you're at high, you're a little bit more friendly. At least I am anyway. Like, it's so easy to like strike up a conversation with like a stranger. And even if you don't want to fucking strike up a conversation with a stranger, you're like watching people, you're like watching the city, there's music in there. It's just nice. It's just really, really nice. And they have really, really good weed, and it's just nice.
I remember when I first went, when I was like, I think I was 19, because I fucked around in A-levels for a year, and because I was forced to, and then I finally broke free and went to college. So like all the people I was in college with were a year younger than me. So we waited a year and finally fucking went to Amsterdam. And there was one of our group of friends that was like, he was a really shy kid, but he was so sweet. He was really, and fuck me, one of the most insanely talented guitarists to this day I've still ever met. Like, really fucking cool guy. But just really wouldn't be the kind of person that would strike up a conversation or whatever, just like exactly what you're saying. And like, I remember being with my other buddy and just like, we were in different parts of the coffee shop or whatever, and just looking over and seeing my shy friend. And then he's literally, you just like, it doesn't even, you don't even think about it. He's just like, oh shit, is that the Purple Haze? To like some stranger. And then they're just talking, and you're just, and you're just like, dude, that's like the most fucking natural. And then when we go back to the hostel, whatever, later, then it's like, oh man, I met this fucking crazy guy, and it turns out like he was a fucking roadie for Lamb of God, like back in the 90s or whatever. And you're just like, what the fuck? And he just, and it, like, and then he has this epiphany of like, oh man, I'm like so shut in all the time, and like if I was just a bit more free and open and whatever, then I could like meet all of these people.
But that's the thing, is weed can be a thing that brings a lot of like, we got together through weed, I think. I'm not sure if it was, did we get together? It's so long ago. Did we get together because of weed?
I've said this on the podcast, so you can like put this as a official Jake quote. Like, I've met anyone significant in my life through either creative projects, music, or drugs. And I feel like they are the strongest ways to form any kind of relationship.
True. But the thing is, there's been like lots of like efforts to legalize weed across America at the moment. I know it's legalized in some southern states recently. And like, it's good and it means good things and blah, blah, blah. But I'm suspicious, because I feel like weed is going to be used as one of the primary weapons that capitalism sort of psychologically uses against people. Like, in a perfect world, weed would have a social kind of culture around it. But I don't think it's an accident that it's now, during sort of lockdown culture and these like on and off again lockdown things, that there's more of an effort to legalize it, because it can, weed, when it's used properly, can make you more social, can make you more confident. It can really bond you with the people you're with. But weed always goes west for me whenever I'm smoking alone a lot. Whenever I'm like isolated or like in a depressive kind of state, if I'm smoking weed, it only ever like further puts me into that sort of isolation and paranoia and like depression. I feel like the environment like really matters too, and the sort of culture that surrounds weed. And I mean, if we're living in this sort of weird COVID like world where everyone is like shut in and ordering Postmates and Just Eat and all that shit, and like ordering like fucking ounces and ounces of weed, it's just another thing to keep you inside and insular and lethargic rather than like experiencing the world. And like, weed can enhance your fucking experience of the world and other people, but like when the culture surrounding it and like the way you're incentivized to use it is in this like really insular way, it can become really mentally dangerous. Like, I remember there have been times in my life where I was like smoking a lot of weed, but like I was also, it was summer and I was like outside a lot with friends and like in the forest somewhere being like a fucking nymph, you know. Or there have been times in my life where I was like isolated and depressed and I was smoking weed, and it was like, it didn't have the same effect, if you know what I mean. It made me further entrenched into that, and I don't like this like weird mixture of like weed and like COVID culture and like pushes for legalization that at this specific time, like, I feel like there's no, it's not an accident that it's being done during this specific time, even though of course I'm for legalization and all that stuff.
I know what you mean, and like within America it's definitely this, and there's just the cynicism around life is just evident in the way it's, everything's dealt with, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So even like within the UK, like, we are the second highest output of medicinal weed in the world.
Yeah.
That's crazy, right? Yeah. To where even like only it was last year where they started to make that shitty, like, not to say shitty, but like, you know, the medicinal weed. Yeah, and all that shit that doesn't get you high, yeah, but it's the buds and you can at least smoke it. And you're just like, oh, wow, there's a shop in Shoreditch where you can buy buds of weed. Like, how fucking novel is that? And it's just, no, but that's the point, isn't it? And then you're just like, well, what imaginary world are we living in? Like, why don't we just have it normally? Like, what is wrong with everyone? But, and the government would refuse to even recognize it, even though the fucking Theresa May's like got massive interest in like, the growing of all that stuff, in the businesses of all that stuff, millions of fucking pounds invested into it, still would make it illegal for people on the street. And in America, the way it's implemented, it's not just, because you would think that you're addressing it as a holistic thing, aren't you, when you're thinking about making a big change like that. There's something that's like, you know, in the America, it's like, in, is it in the Constitution, the scheduling of drugs, or is that just me misunderstanding it? Either way, it's a big deal to make a big change on that and say something is federally legal. But with, or not even to say something's federally legal, even on a state level, in the states, all those prisoners that are associated, like crimes are associated with that, holistically, when you go, this is no longer a problem, you then go, well, those people are set free. But none of that happened, and like none of it, it was all done in a way for specific people to profit off of it. Which is just like the nature of everything in the world at the moment, which is so depressing.
Like, you're like that, you see that, like, you don't see the sort of social ramifications that are promised along with legalization happening a lot of the time. You're right. And like, you know, you see these like yuppie types, or these like downwardly mobile, like, you know, middle class types who like will like open a weed and yoga studio somewhere, or like some silly like artisan cafe bakery thing. And like, you know, it's a certain class that tends to profit from this sort of thing. But that doesn't mean that I'm against it in the abstract.
I think it's also Americans, like, their anti-smoking indoors thing is so fervent, way further than it was in, I feel like, in the UK, where we had, or just in Europe in general, we had way more of a, well, there's just more of an established culture of doing everything because it's all so much older. But it's like, I don't know, like in California, where all the stuff, like, that's the first thing you think of when you think of legal weed in America is California. And like, if you were to smoke indoors in California, like, that's fucking like crazy. That's out of your fucking mind. People don't want to do that. Like, they would look at you like that's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, even in Amsterdam, like, you can smoke weed in the coffee shops, but you can't smoke cigarettes. Like, most of the coffee shops have like a ban on it, but they don't necessarily enforce it all the time, but they're supposed to, because they could lose their license.
Well, it's like one of those things, isn't it, where if you're rolling like a joint, this is like, okay, so cue some like cute like daytime TV like fucking music or whatever, fucking you know, how to roll tobacco joints in Amsterdam and get away with it without looking like a fucking noob. Rule number one, just be like casual, but also be sly about it, because tobacco is not condoned indoor premises smoking. So just roll your joint. Once it's rolled, no one can really prove anything or say anything. So just do your thing and do it quietly, and just like don't make it obvious that you're putting a load of tobacco in the paper, because then someone will come over and like ask you to politely put it under the table or something, and then you'll get the picture. So instead of having that awkward interaction, listen to this podcast and hear my instructions, and then you won't look like a fucking noob when you go to Amsterdam for the first time.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you for that PSA. We appreciate it. We appreciate it.
But my point is, all of the people that run the coffee shops like know that it's an arbitrary rule that's kind of dumb. You're ingesting smoked plant matter. At what point does it fucking matter? Like the whole like secondary hand smoke, blah 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 blah, whatever. Like they're not. They know what people are like. They know what how inconvenient that is for people. Yeah. So they just choose to fucking look the other way and make everyone's life a lot easier instead of getting all fucking Nazi about it and being like, oh, you put tobacco in that, you've got to leave.
It really depends on what coffee shop you're in, though, because some of them are really chill like that. The other ones that are a bit more bougie aren't. Like my favorite one, Abraxas, which is, I highly recommend. They should fucking pay me. I'm just like shouting them out for free or whatever. But yeah, like Abraxas is like, it's like, it has this like really hippie kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like techno utopia kind of vibe. It's really cool. I like Abraxas because it has like a chill aesthetic and stuff. But it is one of the bougier. It's not even that comfortable. It just has like a nice like art vibe to it, which is why I like smoking there. But yeah, it's like the people there, because it's a little bit of a bougier like tourist place, are way stricter about smoking tobacco than like other places are. Like they won't let you. But I like Amsterdam because all of them are themed. There's like a Popeyes the Sailor one. There's like, there are all kinds of weird places, and it's just like a chill vibe. They all have different music and stuff, and I really like that. Like I really really like that. It's such a treat and it's such like a good feeling. But I don't know, maybe I would feel differently if I lived there and it wasn't like a holiday.
One of my favorite places, I can't remember what the name is, but it's all kind of pink inside and shit. It's one, I think it's a chain, so there's like quite a few of them all over the city. And you can go in, bars all downstairs, so you buy all your weed and all the shit that you want, put your bag, you know, away, and then head upstairs, and there's just, like, tables, which I think you can reserve and all the rest of it, but then it's just, like, massive screens everywhere where they're just playing movies and shit. But, like, cool, like, weird movies that you're just like, oh, yeah, I recognise, like, Dax Shepard and fucking whoever the fuck in some weird, like, buddy cop movie from 2005. Like, why not? And then you're just, like, sat there and they bring you all these menus, they can fucking bring you food and milkshakes and shit, and you're just smoking, fucking talking, and then you're like, before you know it, literally all five of you are, like, completely sucked into this movie, and you're just like watching this, and it's probably, you look at it on Rotten Tomatoes afterwards, you're like, that's a 50% movie, but I fucking loved that. That was like perfect for what we're all doing right now.
Well, when you're high, you're like way more suggestible to like whenever Jake and I are both stoned, like he is allowed to choose the movie we watch, because I'm a lot more suggestible and likely to enjoy whatever Talladega Nights rubbish that he decides to put on the TV.
Look, your disdain for early noughties Will Ferrell movies needs to end, because they are some of the best comedy movies of all time.
I'm not the cool girl. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do the Gone Girl speech, but I'm definitely not the cool girl. I'm not going to like pretend to like gross pizza and watch anime with you. Like I'm gonna watch my period dramas and I'm gonna go get my nails done. Like I'm not a cool girl. But yeah, enjoy your 420, everyone. I hope you guys have a nice time. You know, smoke responsibly as well. Don't be, if it's in a place where it's legal, wink wink nod nod, but you know, don't be, you know, we're all in quarantine now, or at least if you're in a place where the quarantine is easing up a little bit, you're coming out of quarantine. The last thing you want to be doing in the pandemic is like self-medicating your woes away with tons and copious amounts of marijuana, except for today it's acceptable.
Just be easy on yourself in general, because it's hard on everyone. Like, you know, I definitely admit that my weed consumption has like gone up through the pandemic. It's fucking spiked wildly last year 100% and got a little bit crazy. But then, like, I brought it down to a very reasonable amount now, I believe. So I'm like, you know, I'm okay with myself. But I definitely know that it's still probably above, like, pre, like, being shut at home 7 days a week, fucking 24/7, all the fucking time.
Think about it this way. You cut back on the weed and we can buy a house, Jake, you know? We could put the money that you, the, like, insane amount. Like, last year, the reason why he cut down and stopped smoking is because we actually looked at the books and looked at just how much that Jake spends on weed, and he was like, yeah, this is, like, he agreed that it was a problem, which is rare. He never does. But, like, the thing is, like, you could buy a lot more stuff with the money that you're using to, like, fucking smoke weed. We could buy a house, for fuck's sake, you know, one day if we saved our money.
Now you sound like a fucking Tory. If you stop smoking weed and stop eating avocado toast, then you could buy a house.
That's not what I'm saying. Jesus Christ, I'm saying us. I'm not talking about people in general. I'm talking about us. I'm saying that if we were a little bit more economically smart and less hedonistic, then we could probably get a house somewhere. Not in London, definitely, but you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's definitely like on the agenda, but like I'm also being fucking kind to myself whilst like I'm trying to figure out what life means again. Do you know what I mean? Throughout all of this. And like what we were saying about how like cynical, it's only going to serve the people that are going to make money from it. Kind of like attitude of things. Like it's so prevalent. Like even like this week you see in like the European Super League get announced.
Yeah. There's been football drama that's been going on as well. But before we talk about that, sports bullshit, I just want to remind people that the World Cup is coming up next year in Qatar, I believe is where it is. Is this the first time that it's going to be in a UAE country?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. So yeah, the World Cup is coming up. And yeah, I never support England. And Jake thinks that I'm like an absolute traitor for the fact that I don't support England in the World Cup.
Well, yeah. What passport do you have?
That's none of your fucking business. I'm allowed to support whoever the fuck
you have a British passport, so that entitles you to support Wales, Scotland, or England, no. Depending on where you're from.
No.
If you don't support the country that you're born in for the World Cup,
no.
I feel like you are an unpatriotic traitor possibly a witch.
Possibly a witch. This is what I mean. Like, he gets so fervent about it. And no, I don't support England because England sucks. And England, like, never fucking wins, okay? I support Brazil because there's more likely a chance that I won't be, like, bitterly disappointed. Or I support Nigeria out of, you know, the homeland. You gotta respect the homeland.
You are allowed to support Nigeria as, like, you know, someone with Nigerian family and, like, all that history and whatever. I understand that. We're not going to get into that. I'm not going to like do an SNL bit and say I've got to apologize for imperialism to allow you to fucking like support Nigeria or some dumb shit. Like fucking, you know, that's allowed. But you can't support Brazil. You've got no fucking affiliation with Brazil. It doesn't matter.
Their team is good. Their team is good, Jake. And that's what it's about. It's about what team is good.
No, so teams is Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, etc., fucking scumbags that have signed this agreement for the European Super League. But they're not nations. Nations are people made of that nation. So you are of a nation or you have history of a nation, so you support that nation. It's not just teams like it's casually flippant fucking whatever. I think most football fans would definitely agree with me there. Like fucking diehard football fans would go a step further and say that that attitude should really be applied to the team that you support as well. It shouldn't just be the team that's winning at the moment and whatever, because that changes all the time.
No, I choose the team. Okay, you need to stop. I choose the team that I feel like is the more likely one to win, like the ones that have done well in the World Cup or the like underdog. Because to me, the nation doesn't really matter all that much, you know? The fucking good team does, or the team with the sexiest players as well, because that's like one plus, because I'm not a fucking sports ball kind of gal, but Jake always forces me to like go to the pub and watch the World Cup. And it's nice because it's like, you know, it's like a community thing, it's camaraderie, you meet people, so I don't want to be like completely misanthropic, so I go and participate. And I'm there to support the team that's either the underdog or most likely to win, and to stare at hot football players. That's the reason I'm there.
this is just like, it's kind of hard sometimes. I feel like people can also feel my pain right now. Like, you know, wow. It's kind of hard.
Wow.
It's kind of hard to like put logic into someone that comes to those conclusions sometimes. You know what I mean? Well, it's because you don't get the ethos of sports, I feel like. You've never been.
I don't care. I'm there to drink beer and I'm there to while out and I'm there to fucking enjoy the time because I don't care about fucking sports like that. And I also don't care about national identity in the same way that you seem to.
Well, it's not national identity, but you're English, so you support the English lads that are out doing the World Cup. Like, that makes fucking, that's just logic, isn't it? That's like monkeyness, maybe, but it's logic nonetheless.
No, it's not. It's like weird nationalist logic. And I remember when I was in boarding school, the World Cup was going on, and me and all of the black kids and Asian kids got in trouble for not supporting England. Like, white working class people in England find it as such a like betrayal if like the other people who are also English but aren't white don't support England. And the thing is, the majority of the people that I know who are English and non-white do not support England during the World Cup.
So can't you imagine the weirdness of that though? Like, everyone else there is like, we're all supporting England because England is in the World Cup, and you're there and you're English but you're black, obviously, whatever, it doesn't matter, and then all your Chinese mates as well are there, and you're all there like, we support Brazil. Like, you just go, you don't understand the point. No, do you
give a fuck? I give a fuck. And we also like how much it triggers the white English because it becomes this like weird tribalistic thing, and then they start being like, you're not fucking English, you're not English, you go home. And I'm like, I am, you can't take my passport away, bitch. But I also don't support England in the World Cup because they suck. When was the last time England won the World Cup?
In the 60s, okay? Yeah, exactly. but
exactly. Why am I going to waste my time supporting England when they don't win? I support Brazil because they're dope.
Look, it's not like Christmas. You don't just like get in the Christmas spirit and then the World Cup comes every year, okay? It's fucking hard. And like, I think Brazil are either Brazil or Germany, it's got to be fucking close between them now, are the country that have won the most World Cups. And even that is like 5 or 6. Do you know what I mean? Like six, maybe 6 or 7 now. It was like at least 5 or 6 when I was a kid really following football. But so like, do you know, even the top nations are only 500% more victorious than we are. But it's also not the point. We came fucking close in like 1990. We got to the semi-finals, out on penalties to Germany, which is like fair game. No. Germans are efficient. No. It's like how they do it, isn't it?
Cope.
But cope. It's also maybe, you know, maybe there's a few too many Brits in the country that weren't, you know, sending the boys a love and like supporting them. And they're like, you know what? We're supporting Brazil or fucking Germany because they're more popular or whatever. Like,
absolutely. So
it's also because the Chinese know that China's never going to fucking win. They're definitely not going to beat England. Nigeria, in with a fucking slim chance of beating England, maybe back in the day, not these days. And fucking, do you know what I mean? So you're like, oh no, we want to stick it to the English. Brazil, help us. You're going to beat them, right?
Shut up. Number one, Nigeria has a sick team. And in fact, most of the players on the English team are like Nigerian boys who are like English or whatever. So many of the different players on the English team are actually, and I think they're traitors. I think that they should go home and they should play for Nigeria, but instead they're there fucking playing for the English, and I disagree with that.
Why would they go and play in Nigeria? Because then they would be met with some uncle saying, ah, please, your paycheck is coming next week. Oh, I promise.
What
I promise.
Fuck? Now. You're getting too. No, no, no. You're getting too brave, okay? Just because you're fucking with a Nigerian woman, just because you're eating all the jollof rice and shit, does not mean that you get to make those kinds of ethnic jokes, yeah? Over familiarity.
I don't know. I think that's exactly what would happen. So, like, I think that's fair game.
There's no corruption on the Nigerian football team, you fucking dickhead.
All right.
Your ethnic humor, this ethnic horseplay is a little bit too much now, Jake. You gotta reel it back.
Well, I nearly did a Chinese accent to say, oh, Brazil, help us, but I didn't because I thought that would be too far.
Come on, dude. What is this? 1999 South Park, huh? We're in a progressive time now. You're not allowed to do shit like that. We're trying to grow this podcast.
Well, it sounds funny. It sounds funnier, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, Jake. Don't get us cancelled, please. But yeah, I technically am not into sports ball. The only time that I am into sports ball is for the World Cup, but not necessarily for the World Cup itself, but because of the culture that surrounds it. Everyone gets drunk, everyone's at the pub, there's a lot of like togetherness and time, and like I'm interested how it will pan out, you know, when it happens next year, because everyone's like coming out of their COVID like malaise. Hopefully by next year shit will be somewhat back to normal. But also the fact that it's in Qatar, where you can only really, you know, consume alcohol at like available, like licensed hotel, restaurant and bars and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's the same thing as like Dubai, where like in Dubai, like if you're at the hotel and stuff, you can drink in there, but it's not necessarily that you're going to be able to go out and do that at every restaurant or yeah. every place you yeah. go. It's kind of quite a specialized thing,
yeah.
really mostly just for tourists.
Yeah. And also it's incredibly expensive as well. Like I've been to Dubai before with my mom and like, yeah, it's fucking expensive. Like alcohol is seriously expensive out there. And not to mention public drunkenness is like very frowned upon out there as well. And I'm just interested to see how like football culture melds together. It doesn't sound like it's going to be like.
Well, it is going to be weird, isn't it? Because obviously the Brits are going to be there to a degree, if it's not a fucking red labeled like Corona fucking no travel zone, whatever, or if it even happens or if it even goes ahead. But I imagine we always turn up wherever it is. So I'd imagine that there's going to be a substantial amount of just Europeans there. And we do like to drink. You know, so I don't, and that goes very hand in hand with the football.
Yeah.
So I really don't know how that's going to pan out. I think that if they got really violent with like Western tourists like that,
I don't think
that would be fucking crazy. No, but how much of a weird, delicate kind of like situation would that be though? That would be like so like, I don't,
because you're on someone else's turf. Like when I went to Dubai, as soon as you get out of the airport, you realize that you got to fucking behave yourself and it's a different culture. Like, I couldn't wear certain stuff out in public and things like my little short shorts and stuff. Like,
no, like with football, there's a culture that goes with football, unfortunately. And like, especially, you know, unfortunately, there's an unsavory culture that goes with an amount of football as well. That's, you know, got a lot of hooliganism and stuff. That's all that passion, all those fan bases. That's where a lot of that was really... You know, that's
a lot of the sort of hooliganish types don't fly to other places that host the World Cup because they're poor working class.
Mate, I'm telling you, I was at the Nations League, the first Nations League. Oh, that sounds fucking crazy. I was at the Nations League. No, and not quite as amazing as that. I was at the Nations League final, like the first one that they'd done, which was, I think, like the winners of, you know, the Euros and the winners of a different, you know, international cup come together and play for the Nations League final. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first thing, the UEFA time they've ever done this. England were involved, I think, if I remember correctly, but they got knocked out in the first game and then in the final they fucking lost. So I didn't get to see them play, which was disappointing. But still, there was a shitload of fans
yeah.
in the city
yeah.
and shitload of, you know, Portuguese fans because Portugal was in it as well. And like, you know, just there was clashes and I saw them I saw the fucking madness and the filth left behind, like bottles and fucking destruction and all sorts of shit, man. So like and that's over the Nations League final, which was the least consequential fucking thing of ever in international football terms.
Yeah.
Like no one gives a shit about it. It wasn't even on a fucking major, you know, broad, like people weren't really watching it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like fucking, it's just like for the World Cup, they're going to go there and they're going to be more passionate about it.
Yeah.
So I can't, and I don't know, that would be such a fucking interesting political thing for like police, like military police, whatever, to like fucking shoot a load of English,
no,
German
they
fucking.
They won't do that. There's just going to be probably a rap on the knuckles because it's going to bring so much money into Qatar and they don't want to fucking mess up the chances or whatever. They're going to fucking, you know, it's going to be fine.
You reckon they'll lax the laws then just for the World Cup so that they can kind of like give an excuse for it.
Yeah, probably, because it's going to be a bunch of tourists from a bunch of different places coming who are going to want to drink and have a good time. But we'll just have to like wait and see like what happens. And besides, like if it means like people getting to go out again and go to the pub and like enjoy the game as usual. The internet has also changed football culture a lot, because there's like a lot of like football, English football Twitter like exists, and there are loads of people on there who like just don't actually watch the game. They just look at like all the different scores on Twitter and then engage in like football discourse and speculation with their like football Twitter mutuals.
That's quite sad. I mean, I have like spiked interest in football every time I decide to get into a Football Manager game again, basically. And I have recently gone back into a Football Manager game. But at the same time, all of this stuff has happened as well with the European Super League that we mentioned that we'll get to in a second. But I guess the World Cup being in Qatar, there's two things of that. So like, you know, the FIFA body and whatever would say, we're trying to spread the influence of football to new places in the world to sustain the sport and gain new interest in it, because it maybe is waning in the West, because they see the amount of people are cynical about football with the amount of decisions that are made around
even
it.
Even your dad, like whenever I bring up football to your dad, he like winces and there's like pain in his heart, and he's like the exact kind of man that you would expect to be like super.
Well, I can't even imagine from my dad's point of view how different football is from when he was even young, like from when I was a kid playing football, like if it like him being that age, because it was such a radically different game, one thing, and let alone the fact that ever since I was born, pretty much the Premier League had existed, which was when all the money and everything was poured into it,
yeah.
And all of these TV rights were cooked up and millions of fucking dollars and whatever, and like some people, and so the FIFA line would be they're trying to spread football to these new places to, you know, garner new fans and everything else. But it's cynical because it's just whoever would bid the most. Because
yeah.
Qatar, they're the people that fucking bid the most to fucking host the World Cup, and then they would choose where it would be, yeah. Basically.
But even then, like, I don't know too much about sports ball. I'm not really interested in it. I'm just interested in, like, having fun every 4 years when the World Cup swings around. But there's recently been a fucking huge drama in football at the moment, and there's riots on the streets of London. Yeah, panic on the streets of London. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. And yeah, there are people like wiling out now for some reason that Jake is gonna have to mansplain to me right now, because I really don't understand what's going on. And my brother was like tweeting about it like manically. He was like, there's never been a morning like this in English football. And I was like, Jesus, like, what's happening?
Well, basically, you know, football's had a hard year with people not being able to go to live events and all of these things. I think even broadcasting the games, it's not really been, you know, people tuning in at home, I guess there's been less of it. People like to go to the pub and watch the game, or they like to go in person, that kind of thing. So it's not that interest in football has declined, but participation in it and activeness of the fandom and all of that stuff of it has fairly declined, I guess, over the last year, and they're losing money. And so, you know, smaller clubs are furloughed, staff and all of this stuff, right? They're really struggling, really struggling to get by and just to even maintain. Whereas you've got major clubs which have now decided, well, we are actually the ones that everyone's coming to see anyway, so we can just join some other league that's going to have continued, you know, high ratings, because it's going to be all the top teams from Europe, with, you know, six of the best from England, three of the best from Italy, Spain, etc. France didn't get on board. Germany didn't get on board because those teams have a moniker of integrity. But everyone else took the paycheck. And it's a model, basically, where there would be 15 continuous teams, which would be at least the 12 or however many founding members were guaranteed a spot.
Wow. So like Arsenal, Chelsea, and like all the main like sort of teams and stuff.
They would be in it forever because they're a founding member.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be only 5 teams that were up for debate that would get in on merit if they won the Champions League, or they did particularly well that season, or I don't even know what their fucking concoction of how they would put those 5 teams in, if you know what I mean. But it basically means that these massive brands, and that's the other thing of it as well, is that Real Madrid, you know, fucking Arsenal, Manchester United, of course, yeah. like, are not just homegrown teams, but they are international brands, mm-hmm. and that their potential is stifled through this very traditional TV rights, traditional broadcast, all of this stuff. They want to push it in a new way where they can have a subscription service where if you want to watch Man United play, you pay £1 on your phone. And there it is. Mm-hmm. And if you've got 150 million fans that want to watch Man United play every week, that's 150 million quid a week. Mm-hmm. But like, that's the kind of money that's at stake with this kind of stuff. So it's not that they're making decisions out of just like, oh, because that would be a lot. Like, there's serious fucking money that can be actually made on top of what they're already making, which yeah. is the sickening thing, right? Yeah. Is that these are already very wealthy people, yeah. not the players. I'm not talking about the players, which, like, if you're talking about it in a materialist sense, are the workers. Like, they are handsomely, you know, compensated for their labor and fucking sports entertainment, right? But the managers are like billionaires in a lot of cases. These are people that are already making a lot of money in these situations, and they've chosen to double down and destroy the culture of the sport to further their own profits. Yeah. And there was even a direct quote, I think, from an insider that I've got here that was literally like, heard one of the owners of one of the six British teams, it wasn't disclosed which one exactly it was, said, "Our primary job is to maximize the revenues and profits. The wider good of the game is a secondary concern." And like, and that really like hit home to me, because it feels like, I mean, it's just the start, that is the stark, blunt sentence of the reality of our entire existence. Yeah, yeah. The good of the game, the good of fucking what's right for us, is secondary mm-hmm. to profit in every single situation, which even in the fucking legalized weed shit that we're talking about, that's like, this is, you know, the yeah. theme of the podcast, yeah. right? I guess we're stumbling upon now. But it's just like the constant, I don't know, that stark reminder of just how blunt that was. Yeah. It really just like fucking hit home.
And I think it's really hitting hard now because football is so integral to like British identity, especially because most of the big brands come out of England as well. Like, you know, I grew up in Islington, still like live around that area, and like Arsenal, I grew up with like that's the team that I like, you know, everywhere Arsenal, this that. Jake, even though he has nothing to do with Chelsea, still supports Chelsea because he's a posh bleh.
No, so incorrect, okay? So there's a leeway you get when you're a football supporter, okay? Oh. That you can, when you're very young, switch football teams. Okay, any time after that is absolute treachery, and you're just like some sort of flimsy, like, whatever. Oh, who are you going to support next week? Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter anymore, does it? So like, you stick by your guns and you stick by your team. That's like kind of the whole point of it. Do you know what I mean?
Arsenal has.
So for me, I used to support Manchester United because red was my favorite color. Right, okay, and then and also not just only because of that, because my great uncle as well was a massive Manchester United fan, so like he got to me very young and like got me to be a Manchester United fan. But then my brothers took me to a Chelsea v Manchester United game, and I literally bet that Manchester United would win, and they didn't. So then I became a Chelsea supporter, which, like, when you're like 6 or 7 or whatever, that's like, yeah, you're allowed to do that. But then past, when you're, you know, you're 10, you're fucking whatever, you're an actual person with a cognitive brain, then it's like, you need to stick by your guns now, because you're a supporter of a team, and that means something, okay? So.
No, seriously, like I don't understand why you would choose Chelsea of all teams, considering that Chelsea is like number one, the poshest, richest area, number one. Number two, they also have the highest incident, might I add, of like racial incidents within their like little like football club milieu. Weren't they the ones that were like throwing bananas at their like black players? Cancel Jake, cancel.
There are many clubs that have happened to. But I do believe that has happened at Chelsea
yeah,
in the past.
Exactly.
We've also had like very, you know, I think misogynistic and sexist chants that were also banned from the stadium, revolving celery being used as a dildo or something like that, basically. proper Chelsea fans are going to fucking slaughter me if they heard this. Like, that's probably an absolute butchering of what that chant was about. But, like, it got banned from the fucking stadium. That's what I fucking know.
Well, but no, but going back to what you were saying, it sounds a bit like a massive sort of upward transfer of wealth and, like, a huge fuck you to the culture of football, which hasn't necessarily had grassroots, like, ethos for a long time, like, at all. Like, it's been corporatized since cable TV kind of became intrinsically part of it and stuff like that. And that's why your dad is, you know, whenever you talk to him about football, there's this disillusionment, not just because, quote, he thinks the football players are, quote unquote, too effeminate, not just because he thinks they're too effeminate now, but also because of how much, like, money plays a huge role in it now. And this sounds like another smack in the face. So, like, yeah, I'm not surprised that people are rioting right now in the UK over this decision, because it seems like yet another communal half of life that's, like, being sort of foreclosed upon. And it's been an important one, especially to, like, the working class, not just of England, but of many different countries. And yeah, it sounds like they're sort of trying to drag it into this sort of new format so that they can profit.
Yeah, they want to increase their profits. And I know what you mean. Like, it's not been about, you know, working class, whatever, for a long time. But in a way, like, football is one of the only true meritocracies left in this country. Like, if you're fucking shit hot at football as a kid and you're playing for a team, undoubtedly you'll get fucking seen by someone. Undoubtedly you'll naturally progress through that system. Maybe sometimes you'll get snagged along the way, and there are very talented young fellas that got, you know, scouted for Oxford when the real path was at Arsenal, and then they didn't, you know, have the career that they wanted. But regardless, there's some form of chance that comes very naturally out of, like, just being fucking sick at the game. So it's, and when you sort of start to say people have got a permanent place, yeah, it's that takes away any kind of competition from it, yeah, doesn't it? And it's also, it just kind of, it completely cheapens it to the just a complete spectacle, yeah, almost to, like, wrestling. Yeah. It's just, it's not, there's no stakes of it. Who wins the European Super League? Who gives a shit? Because 3/4 of the team are there again next year. Yeah. It does has no fucking stakes or consequences. Yeah. Like, at the moment, the fact that, you know, Liverpool didn't fucking face Real Madrid until, like, and since 2009 or something like that, yeah, that was the last time those two teams faced each other in the European Champions fucking League final, like, whatever. That means that that has all of this history, and over the last 100 years, how many times, or not 100 years for the European Champions League before everyone calls me out, but, you know, decades of history of the European Champions League, of, like, how, of when these teams have fought against each other, and the kind of, the, all of that comes into it every single time. It then happens again years and years later and whatever. Like, it all builds to the story of it. And then once you start doing this, it becomes like, well, now you're going to be punished. So you'd either be kicked out of participating in any UEFA kind of thing. So it would mean that, and then who wants to watch a Champions League with none of the best teams in Europe in the fucking competition? And the same thing in the Premiership as well. Who wants to watch the Premiership with Middlesbrough versus Aston Villa? But, like, you want to see the best of every, all scale, the whole thing.
But like I said before, it's just like another one of those, like, huge slaps in the face. And I'm pretty sure this is going to inspire more people to just kick off. Like, all of the stuff, like, the whole, like, entire COVID culture lockdown has become, like, a massive upwards transfer of wealth from poor to rich. And, you know, all of these different areas of our lives are, like, now being foreclosed upon. And I feel like this is one thing that may actually tip the apple cart, considering just how much football is, like, a huge, like, fucking cultural hearth in lots of different places.
Well, as I said, I'm not super in tune with the talk, football talk and stuff. So apparently this had been on the cards for a couple of years, and even Jurgen Klopp was quoted, you know, talking about it from 2019. Mm-hmm. So it has been around for a while, this idea, but it took me completely by surprise, just because you kind of think football, in the way that it's structured, is a given. Mm-hmm. It's just traditional at this point. Like, it's not going anywhere. Maybe they'll, like, they introduced, you know, VAR, which is like video assisted refereeing. And so when it, when the, if the ball goes over the line, it's no longer just like if the fucking human eye is like yes or no, it's like actually they've got, yeah, they've got, and people even argue that's taking away from the game, whatever. Like, it's, the game's going to evolve, those sorts of things, I understand it. But to like completely take away the competition and the spirit of everything, and to destroy the fucking culture of the whole fucking thing, which is so close to so many fucking people, like the way, like, you know, people identify as all these different things now. It used to be you identified as a fucking Man U supporter or a City supporter, mate. Like, or, you know, like whatever city you're in Liverpool, you're a Liverpool supporter, you're a Scouser, or you're a fucking Everton supporter. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're, it goes like that's what people used to identify as, because that's how passionate they were about this sort of stuff.
Yeah, at the same time, like I'm saying, it's just another one of those huge slaps in the faces. And like, England is reeling right now. Now, you know, football's fucked up. People are rioting. Our fucking institution of the monarchy is also, you know, struggling at the moment. Bayes' ass Charles, you know, pieced out of existence before they could make him sit, you know, through a diversity seminar or whatever the fuck. He was like, nah, fuck that shit. I'm going to the great beyond, you know.
One of our patrons in the Discord managed to successfully trigger me the other day by saying that, but obviously I'm joking as well, but like saying that Britain, like what people are going to remember Britain like is that place where Harry Potter's from. Because that's our biggest cultural product, and that's like what people know us for. And I was sort of saying that, obviously, no, vehemently. Because not just because I think Harry Potter is shit and whatever, but like, because I think there are far more like bigger things than that. But if you were talking about like, you know, pop figurines sold and whatever, yeah, you're probably absolutely right, Harry Potter. But I think actually culturally, when especially we talk about football, I think football is probably the biggest cultural product of Britain. Yeah. And it's not that I guess people would think, oh, England or football, that place where football's from, but it is also kind of like, I feel like that's affected and reached the lives of way more people internationally than fucking Harry Potter.
There you go, you've won the argument now. But yeah, what's your, on a lighter note, what's your favourite football chant? A non-misogynistic one, a non-racist one, please.
Well, to be honest, I'm not obviously a Liverpool fan, but it would be the Liverpool one, because it's got, it's a brilliant chant. And I think the way, it's also just because it's got that, the use of that in Pink Floyd as well, in Wish You Were Here. I think it has the sentiment of like, of,
is it that you'll never walk alone chant?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so like, I think that one's definitely like the best one, probably. Like, I've got to give Liverpool that. They might be a fucking shit team.
Oh, here we
even
go.
Though they won the Premier League last year. But like, or was it last year or whatever? They won it recently.
I don't actually know any football chants, but I do recall drunken hooligans singing Come On Eileen at like the top of their fucking lungs after like an Arsenal game or whatever.
That's just a fucking British pub song, mate. That's just what we sing when we've had a few too many. It's like Ring of Fire, Come On Eileen, that killer's song, you know. There's like,
which one? Mr. Nice Guy or whatever? Yeah, yeah. Mr. Brightside.
Yeah, exactly. Any of those, any of that, like even comes on a jukebox, anything, you have however many, you know, piss British people there, singing along with you 100%.
Jake's like so camp when he's drunk. The one that he like fucking gets down to is West End Girls. Like, whenever that fucking dun 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 did it, did it, Jake's just there like fucking tearing it up.
Mate, West End Girls is a fucking bop. Let's like not mistake anything. Pet Shop Boys fucking slap.
Yeah, they do.
Like, that's a great song. I think, like, I don't know, that or Ring of Fire musically are probably the best ones anyway. So, you know, I stand by my choice.
This is why I'm looking forward to the World Cup. I've been so, like, normally I would frown on such yobbish behavior, but I've been inside so long that even a pub with people, like, singing, you know, fucking Wonderwall at the top of their lungs sounds appealing to me right now.
Yeah, flying to Qatar and getting arrested by Saudi Arabia, like, authorities for hooliganery is definitely, like, sounds like an adventure after a fucking year in lockdown.
Jake, like, arrives at the airport with, like, his Hunter S. Thompson, like, suitcase full of fucking...
Oh, my God. Literally just driving through the desert, fucking backcountry style.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Low Society. If you like what we make and you want to support us, I know we've not been able to do any calls of action for a while because we've had guests and stuff, but if you like what we make and you want access to bonus episodes, give us $5 on Patreon. It helps us out. We are trying to establish our video format, so we need extra equipment and stuff. So yeah, it definitely helps us out when you sign up and pledge on Patreon. Follow us at Twitter. Also check out our YouTube channel. We also have a YouTube channel too. And you know, find us, we're everywhere. Go on Reddit. And if you become a Patreon, you also get to join our Discord. We also have a parasocial Patreon tier for $25. So if you want to send us a question that is like pre-recorded that we'll add and answer on the show, feel free to do that as well, because we love hearing from you guys.
Or if you just want to send us a question, and you know, whatever, just send us a question to lowsocietypodcast@gmail.com. We won't obviously like play that out on the show, but we will like read it and we will like respond to it. Yeah. We always love to like hear what you guys think about what we're saying. I mean, this has got like an American, you know, transformation, isn't it? So Americans, tell me if your sports are not competitive because your teams don't get relegated. Do you feel like that? Like, what are the stakes? Tell me, because it doesn't seem like there are many compared to English sport. But there we go.
Well, we love you guys, and we shall catch you again next week with a very, very special episode. Catch you later. Goodbye.
Bye.